Detroit, an American city that once was the hub of the world's leading automobile manufacturers, became the largest municipality in U.S. history to enter into Chapter 9 bankruptcy after federal judge Stephen Rhodes handed down his ruling on December 3rd in a controversial case being watched closely around the country. The ruling allows bankruptcy proceedings to move forward over the objections of 48 labor union groups and public employee retirees who had urged Judge Rhodes to reject Detroit's eligibility for bankruptcy. Opponents of the ruling have already taken steps to appeal the case. As part of the bankruptcy process, Judge Rhodes announced he will allow Detroit, which is $18 billion in debt, to cut pension benefits, but emphasized that he will only authorize pension cuts if he finds them to be fair and equitable. Because Judge Rhodes' authorization for cuts to city workers' pensions is viewed as a possible landmark legal precedent for other cities in financial trouble, retirees and labor unions were quite naturally alarmed. Further, Detroit's unelected emergency manager, Kevin Orr, who was appointed by Michigan's anti-union Republican Governor Rick Snyder, has moved forward on privatization of city services and signaled he may sell off many masterpieces in the city's Institute of Arts Museum. Your reporter spoke with John C. Filo, legal director with the Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center for Economic and Social Justice. Here he examines the recent court ruling in Detroit's bankruptcy case and the impact it may have on public employee pensions in the Motor City and other municipalities across the country.
One of the main issues from our perspective and other perspectives is, A, whether the city, through this emergency manager that the state has now appointed as a new form of government here in Michigan, actually negotiated in good faith with its creditors, and particularly the unions. And then the second largest issue, I think, was whether or not the city or the emergency manager acting as the city can cut pension benefits and retiree health care plans to the degree or to any degree or to the degree that he's contemplating. We have a constitutional provision here in Michigan that attempts to protect pension rights. That's in the state constitution. So a real question for the judge was, does that constitutional provision make it such that the emergency manager can't touch those sort of pension rights in the bankruptcy? Ultimately, Rhodes decided that they can go after these pensions, although the judge did caution that he has to approve any plan, and the decision should not be read as him lightly granting that sort of approval in advance.
How do you think Judge Rhodes' ruling here could set a dangerous precedent jeopardizing the security of public employee pensions in cities across the U.S.?
Well, these become the targets. These become the way to balance your budget. I think that's a tremendous threat. Here in Detroit, the average non-uniformed pensioner is about $16,000 a year, and they also get health care benefits because they're not entitled to Medicare. The uniformed employees, it's about $30,000. These people are not living large. They don't have, predominantly do not have large pensions. It is a pensions that basically get these people through to be able to live with some modicum of dignity. The proposals that have been put forward are cutting the health care by about 80%, and same with some of these pensions. To take someone who's making $16,000 a year and cut the seniors' health care by 80% when they're not covered by Medicare or other programs, that's immoral, and it should, I don't know, words escape me, the level of outrage that people should have on that. And that, what's happening in Detroit, is likely to set a precedent for other cities, other municipalities. It's profoundly unique and profoundly dangerous to adopt that as your plan for going forward. Detroit is the first city to hit this level of crisis where the state is literally contributing nothing to stabilizing the community, to stabilizing the public services, or to shoring up pensions. Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, New York, Cleveland, and a host of other cities have saw grave financial crises at various times during the past 30 years. In each of those instances, the state came in and eventually, in some cases, the federal government came in to help stabilize the situation so you could move forward from there. Well, Michigan state government has a principle that they will not contribute and will not provide monetary support in any way. Now, that's when the state actually was running a budget surplus the past couple of years. And the way they've done that is cutting revenue sharing to cities, which was part of the process that led to Detroit hitting a crisis. I think that's, you know, that's another precedent that's being set here, and that should cause folks some grave concern. For the state government to sort of morally abdicate its role is, to me, unconscionable. When Detroit's troubles are not because of local corruption and not because of local incompetence, we have, like every large city in the country, our fair share of corruption and incompetence. But this financial crisis is directly traceable to policies of deindustrialization that this country bought into, this country put in place for the past 20 to 30 years. Those were policy choices we made consciously, and it hit Detroit, an industrialized city, very hard, coupled with predatory lending and some of the highest foreclosure rates in the country, which has a direct impact on property tax revenues here in the city, and then unemployment. What we have in the city is a concentration of some of the of a very large low-income population who don't have the resources to weather those sort of storms. And we've said to those people, you're on your own. But why do we do it? And I don't think you can get around the fact of what this city looks like. And it's two factors. One, it's predominantly African-American. And two, it's seen as a union city. And if those two variables weren't in play, I have a, you know, it's just my opinion, but a very strong feeling that the country would have a very different reaction, particularly when I say the country. I think most people in the country are highly empathetic with Detroit, but from those people who are in positions of institutional power within the government and elsewhere might have a very different reaction.
That was John C. Filo, legal director with the Maurice and Jane Sugar Law Center for Economic and Social Justice. Find links to analysis and commentary on Detroit's bankruptcy by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.